compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to the Patrick Madrid Show. My number is 888-914-9149. Boy, do we have a lot to talk about today. Cyrus, how are you doing today?
Hey, happy Friday, Patrick. How are you?
Hey, it's Friday.
It's Friday. Great. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, I'm going through old emails, and I came across one. This is from a couple years ago, and I just, it's apropos, and I thought it would be fun to read it now. Is that all right if I...
Yeah, does it have to do with something in the news?
Well, it's old, but yes. It's funny how this, it's almost timeless. In the radio biz, we call these evergreens. So this is an evergreen email from a gentleman named Brandon, and I will read it verbatim. Okay. Hi, Pat. First time listening to your show and just wanted to say, keep up what you're doing. At first, I was stunned and angered that you just let anyone with any viewpoint talk on your show. You give them a national soapbox to send out the message of what they want. However, after listening to how you talk to them, and you never back down from your beliefs, and it's amazing, some of the people calling in angry end up thanking you for what you do by the end of their call. And then you invite them back on the show to discuss it in even more detail at another time. So you are showing us how to talk to people of different beliefs without ending the conversation even more angry at each other, which in this day and age seems impossible to do. So thank you for all you do, and you have definitely gained a daily listener in myself, Brandon.
Oh, that is fantastic.
This could have came in the mail yesterday.
Hmm. You know, that's a good point. Maybe that's the reason for bringing it up now. I love those old emails. Go back and kind of see what people were saying years ago. First of all, thank you, Brandon. I probably thanked you once before, but thank you again for that. It is interesting, Cyrus, isn't it, how radio provokes very strong emotions, and that's not always a bad thing. In fact, sometimes it could be a wonderful thing when people are sort of jolted out of complacency, maybe, or they look at the world a different way after considering other viewpoints. And that's what we try to do on this program, as you know.
That's so important, to allow yourself to listen to someone else's viewpoint and try to understand, you know, where they're coming from, and you know, stay strong in your own belief, but also be willing to learn from the person you're talking to. And I feel like a lot of the listeners that call in to talk to you or to yell at you sometimes, even though they're strong-willed in their opinion, your approach of being calm and patient breaks down breaks down that anger and gives them the opportunity to learn and grow.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate that, Cyrus. And that's certainly our goal here on the program, is to, as the old saying goes, to shed more light than heat. And that's one of the things that radio has sort of devolved into in many respects, certainly what they call combat radio, where it's almost like a sport where you want to see someone torn to shreds. And there is an appetite that people have for that, but we don't go in that direction here. We try to stay away from that. But we're not afraid to get into topics that might be challenging, uncomfortable. We always want to choose topics on the program that focus on important issues, even if the story itself may be not necessarily important, but it leads to something, or it's pointing toward something that is of much greater significance. I find value in that. You know, what was the story that we talked about just the other day, where it was, and I forget now what it was some basic run-of-the-mill dumb little story, but it had a bigger meaning behind it that we were able to explore. And I'm very grateful for that. And I really appreciate all of you when you call in and share your opinion. You don't necessarily agree with what I have to say. That's fine. We can have a discussion. And as Brandon said, how did he put it at the very end of his email, Cyrus, about how people can have a conversation
together? Yeah, you're showing us how to talk to people of different beliefs without ending the conversation even more angry, you know, than it started. Which in this day and age seems impossible. And yes, yes, it does sometimes.
Well, we get the emails, so we know what's on people's minds. And I thank you. Whether you agree with me or disagree, I thank you for taking time to at least listen. So thank you for that. The number is 888-914-9149. And thank you, Cyrus, for finding that. That's a great catch. Hey, Cyrus, if someone asked you on the street if you knew what the 25th Amendment was, what would you say?
Well, thanks to working on this show, I know I have a pretty good idea what it is. But
you wouldn't
before
know
that. You? No, I would have had no idea.
You chances are have the text of it in front of you. So why don't you read the text of the 25th
I
Amendment?
I do not have it in
yes,
front
you
of
do.
Me.
Right.
I gave.
Well, I have it in front of me.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so this is the 25th Amendment, which governs presidential vacancies, disabilities, inabilities. Obviously, if you have a president who's incapacitated in some way, it's important that you have a provision in place so that you can deal with that. So let me read to you the text of the 25th Amendment. And you may say, why are you reading that? Well, it's in the news. You'll understand in a minute. The 25th Amendment is Section 1. In case of the removal of the president from office or of his death or resignation, the vice president shall become president. Section 2. Whenever there is a vacancy in the office of the president shall nominate a vice president who shall take office upon confirmation by a majority vote of both houses of Congress. Now, we saw that with the departure of Spiro Agnew, Vice President Agnew under Richard Nixon, and he chose Gerald Ford as his vice president. And then the first section of the 25th Amendment applied to Gerald Ford when President Nixon resigned office. So automatically, Gerald Ford, who was, what was he? He was a congressman from Michigan, I believe. Next thing you know, he's the president of the United States. Section 3, whenever the president transmits to the president pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives his written declaration that he is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, and until he transmits to them a written declaration to the contrary, such powers and duties shall be discharged by the vice president as acting president. Section 4. Whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may by law provide, transmit to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives. Stick with me, Cyrus. This is important. Their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the vice president shall immediately assume the powers and duties of the office as acting president. Then the last part says, thereafter, when the president transmits to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives his written declaration that no inability exists, he shall resume the powers and duties of his office unless the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive department or such other body as Congress may by law provide, transmit within 4 days to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. And then it goes on from there. So there's quite a bit in this, but the upshot of it is that it's designed to provide for an orderly and smooth succession of office if it should happen that the president, whoever the president may be at any given time, is incapacitated in some way or another.
True and international effort to pressure.
All right, stop. Yeah, we'll get to that. This is being raised by the former Obama doctor for President Obama. So he's a partisan in favor of President Obama. And of course, during the Obama administration, now President Biden was the vice president for 8 years. And so he's not coming at this from a partisan perspective. He's not, you know, he's fine with the goals, I guess you might say, of the administration, as far as I can tell. But he has, in an interview, his name is Dr. Ronnie Jackson. He has predicted that President Biden is going to either be forced to resign or will face the 25th Amendment over issues related to his fitness for office. Now, this is an article that you can find at the Daily Wire. We'll get a link to it for you so you can read it. Jackson, who now represents Texas's 13th Congressional District, said in an interview, he says he's been saying for a while that, quote, there's something going on here. And he says, and I've been saying that it's only going to get worse. And guess what? We're watching that happen right before our eyes right now. And I'm at the point right now where, you know, I went from, you know, telling people we should be concerned about what might potentially be going on and to now saying, hey, what is happening right now? He said in his interview, he said, where are the people in our academic medicine that were out there calling for President Trump to have cognitive tests? Where are these people? He said, there's something seriously going on with this man right now, referring to the president. And as you know, I think that he's either going to resign, they're going to convince him to resign from office at some point in the near future for medical reasons, or they're going to have to use the 25th Amendment to get rid of him. This is some serious stuff going on right now. So he also, in the interview, said that there are members of the cabinet, the current cabinet under the Biden administration, who are likely looking at President Biden and wondering if he is able to effectively carry out his duties as president of the United States. Jackson added that this is a national security issue at this point. It really is. Now, okay, so he's a physician. He has, from what I gather at least, long-standing, up-close and personal interactions with President Biden. He has the standing to assess things like this. I don't think he was attempting to practice medicine in that interview. I think that would be contrary to what physicians are permitted to do. But in any case, he's offering a studied opinion on the issue that many people have been raising questions about. And what's interesting is if you go back to the primary campaign, when Joe Biden was running against Kamala Harris and all the others, there was a roster of what, maybe a dozen or so candidates at one time at least. And even then, before there was any real sense that Joe Biden would get the nomination, even then, his own people, not his own personal people, but people within the Democratic world, they were wondering the same thing. They were asking the same kinds of questions and referring to things like his memory loss or his inability to get through a sentence. Now, this is not said as a criticism of him, but people can't help but notice that there seems to be something amiss here. And Cyrus, I believe you have some audio by way of demonstrating. This is not to make fun of anybody. This is not, you know, this is not for humor. This is a very serious issue. And the 25th Amendment, of course, is a very momentous threshold to reach if it should be decided that there must be some change because of a problem with his memory or some other issue. So please, we're going to play this audio. These are selections of President Biden speaking recently, and it's a way to sort of demonstrate that there seems to be something that is causing concern even among the friends and the allies of President Biden. So here, I don't know what you have specifically, Cyrus, so let's roll it.
For America to back up on its feet and once again fight for the proposition that we hold these truths to be self-evident. Sounds corny, not a joke, think about it. We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by you know the thing. You know how we talk about it. Are we the people, folks?
What kind of country we're going to be? Four more years of George, he's going to find ourselves in a position where if Trump gets elected, we're going to be in a different world.
I'll lead an effective strategy to mobilize true international effort to pressure 1 million Michiganders. Donald Trump thinks health care is a privilege. Barack and I think it's a right for people to have bad health care.
I think that's enough.
Yeah. Those are just selections, and they're. I presume that those are from recent speeches, both before and after the election. That's what it sounded like. So this is an example of what this physician is talking about, and I wanted to bring it to your attention only because, you know, we've never really witnessed this kind of thing before. I'd have to go back and search presidential history to find out if maybe there was a president who, because of an incapacitation, an illness. I know presidents have died in office. I'm not talking about that. But if there were a president who no longer was up to the task, I just don't remember hearing about there being the invocation of this amendment to remove a president from office. Now, if it's happened, it just escaped me. Maybe I was off that day, or maybe I didn't come to class that day when we had physics. So please to reemphasize this. This is not to make fun of President Biden. I feel a kind of sorrow for him, having seen the way in which he seems befuddled and he seems forgetful. And it seems there was one instance, we don't have audio for this, but I saw this just the other day, in which he was walking into or out of a building. I believe he was walking into the White House. And as he's walking by the Marines, he says the words, "Salute the Marines." Now, he doesn't salute them, But you can hear him as he's walking by. He says he's with the First Lady, and he says, "Salute the Marines," and then he just continues walking. So when that surfaced, there was obviously the question: well, is there an earpiece? Is there somebody on the other end giving him cues or pointers or tips or something? It doesn't make sense why somebody would say "Salute the Marines" as you walk by and not salute them. So whether or not that's what's going on, something's going on, and we're touching on it. This is it, but we're touching on it now because it's possible that maybe this will be something big in the news in the not too distant future. And at the very least, this would be a good reminder to pray for the president. You know, it says in 1 Timothy 2 that we should pray for all people, for kings and for all in authority, that we may lead a quiet and tranquil life in all dignity and devotion. Jesus talked about even if you don't like somebody, even if the person has done you wrong, even if that person is your enemy, that you should still pray for him or her. So regardless of your political persuasions, I think we could all at least agree that especially somebody who's got a great responsibility deserves a lot of prayers from us, even if you don't agree with him. And there's plenty that I do not agree with Joe Biden about, that's for sure. 888-914-9149. So Cyrus, just keep a marker next to this segment of the show in case this does wind up becoming a news item. Let's go to Alejandro now, listening in McAllen, Texas. Hello, Alejandro.
Hi, I was calling to ask a question. I was wondering, I'm kind of confused with the role of the Catholic Church with immigration, because I live in a border town where it seems that in the attempt of trying to help, the church might be making it worse. I don't know if that makes any sense.
I'm not sure it does. I'm not sure if I follow. Can you restate it for me?
Yes. I'm confused with the role of the church in immigration, because the goal is to help our people, and I see that mm-hmm. humanity part of it, try mm-hmm. to be there for them. But overall, in the economy, in the actual situation where we're at in the city, it doesn't really help anybody but the individual, and I think we should be focused on helping everybody as a whole, not just one individual person.
Okay. Well, if I understand you, are you asking about the question of justice, and is it just to offer help for people who are here illegally at the expense of those who are citizens? Is that what you're asking about?
Well, the church's help mm-hmm. for that, because the churches here in the area are very involved in that. So I don't know what the role is how that's managed at the bishop level, at the higher levels of the church, mm-hmm. where there's any kind of rules and say this is how much you can help or this is how much you can give.
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. I don't know that there's any kind of formula for, oops, you've helped too much, you've gone over it. I don't think there's anything like that. As a general principle, the church seeks to help all people, and in particular poor people, and that would include people who are coming up from impoverished countries fleeing violence. Not all of them are fleeing violence, but the church's default position is to do what we can to help, and that would include immigration. This is a particularly difficult topic, not only because it's been so highly politicized, but also because it's not really clear what is the best way to go about doing this, especially when we have documented examples of people who are citizens who are receiving less in benefits than some people who are, in fact, many people who are coming up illegally from other countries, crossing the border illegally, etc. Many people come up legally, many don't. So that's one of the difficulties. And the church, for her part, I think at least, is seeking to apply both mercy and compassion as well as justice in any given case, so that it's a good solution. And I'm not sure that anybody has really come up with the solution. In fact, I'm reminded of comments that Archbishop Jose Gomez has made in recent years. He's the Archbishop of Los Angeles, and he himself has talked about how the system is broken and it needs to be fixed. So I believe it's acknowledged by our Catholic bishops, for example, that this is a serious problem. But as of yet, at least, I haven't seen any single solution rise up above all the others that seems to be genuinely compassionate as well as genuinely just. but the church is seeking to do that. Does that answer your question?
Right, and so yes, but that kind of leaves us it's so vague that it leaves me as a Catholic questioning, well, I see one church doing more than the other and or taking a different approach. So I'm like, why are you doing this and why are you doing that? Why are you feeding people and why, or something it's totally left to the right and black or white. It's not consistent within the church. And I see that everybody's doing something different. So I kind of was wondering, is there something that it says otherwise?
Well, the government may have certain limitations on what non-governmental agencies can do and not do. But as for the church, I think her goal is to do anything that can be done that is compassionate as well as just to help other people. Thanks, Alejandro. I'll be right back with more right after this. The number is 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Cha-cha-cha. Welcome back. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We'll go to Ann now in Chandler. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning, Patrick. Patrick, my question is a question that I've had on my mind since the beginning of the election race. If a person has dementia that accelerates and it's becoming a problem, are they able to go to confession and make a very good confession and be forgiven if they're not able to think clearly?
Yeah, that's a question that affects a lot of people and many people who are watching a loved one.
My sister as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I've had some extended family members who have gone through that. So my understanding is this, that even if the person is not sufficiently lucid to, say, remember with any clarity the sins that have been committed, if the person here and now is lucid enough to say, whatever my sins are, Lord, I'm sorry and I love you, that would be sufficient for the person to make a good confession. And he could say, or she could say, for all the sins of my past life, I don't remember them now, but whatever they are, I'm sorry for those sins. So the essence of confession is to make an honest effort to not only to accuse yourself of whatever the sins may be, but to have that firm purpose of amendment and love of God. And even if you can't remember the sins, you're still able to make a good sacramental confession. So that, I think, would be the short answer to that question.
Well, that's the loving, relieving way that God is with us. And that's a relief to my heart to hear your thought on that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And there is something else I'll add to that, Anne. There's what's called virtual intention. And you can have an actual intention in your mind at the moment. I intend to pray for so-and-so. I promised I would, and I'm going to pray for this person, you know, by name. But you can also have the virtual intention that says that, I know that I promised to pray for so many people. I don't even remember who they are, Lord, but I'm praying for all of them now. And not only that, you don't even have to necessarily have that thought present in your mind to be able to still pray for them, because your intention is going forward, I want to pray for these people every day. And so in your prayers, they are virtually included in those intentions, even though not by name. And I think the same thing applies in the case of somebody who has the virtual intention on a day-to-day basis to be good, to love God, to, if you fall into sin, you get out of sin, you go to confession. So that too would be present as part of this, in that if the person slips into dementia and no longer is even able to say, I'm sorry, God, for my sins, just completely beyond that point, I think that the virtual intention that was there before or during that slip into dementia is also part of his yes to God.
Thank you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You. You've relieved my heart of a little bit of a little bit of worry.
Oh, I'm glad.
Have a very beautiful day.
Thank you. You too. And it's a great reminder for us to pray for all those people who may be going through this difficult situation, that they'll have that time of clarity to be able to make peace with God before the time comes. Thank you, Anne. I want to talk about something right now that deals with what we discussed about President Biden a minute ago. Some people are entirely misunderstanding this, and this needs to be addressed. Some people are complaining. Not many, but a few people are complaining. Well, this is a Catholic radio station. How come you're talking about politics? We're not talking about politics. We're talking about a fellow human being who happens to be a brother in Christ. We're talking about the President of the United States, who at every turn announces how Catholic he is and that he's a Catholic and so forth. We should take that seriously. It also happens to be a show in which we cover a great deal more than just religion. And if you've listened to this program even for a week, you know that. There have been some programs where we've gone all 3 hours and haven't really touched on a religious topic. So for those of you who are hot under the collar, for those of you who are steaming mad because I talked about President Biden and the fact that there are those in the government and in the world of medicine who are concerned by what they're seeing, and if you can't muster enough compassion for somebody who's in a situation like that, then I think, you know, this is probably not the show for you. Please understand, this is not a the Bible answer show. You'll get some of that, and we do talk about those issues, but that's not all we talk about. So again, fair warning. We get into all kinds of topics on this program. If that is uncomfortable for you, or you don't like that, we have many other wonderful programs on Relevant Radio that are there for you. And you can get all of those things that you're looking for. But if you're not finding those here on this program, then I understand. And I won't be the least bit offended if you decide that you want to listen to a different program on Relevant Radio, of course. So please, I just ask all of you, check your anger. And maybe ask yourself, what is it that's making you so angry? You know, that's not a fruit of the Holy Spirit, to become outraged because somebody is talking about a topic that you think is, you know, whatever. This is a program in which we try to deal fairly and squarely and listen to all people's voices and discuss issues that you're not going to hear discussed in the secular media, or you won't hear it discussed the way we approach it here. That's all. Anyway, 888-914-9149. Anything you'd like to add to that, Cyrus? Because I know you have opinions about this as well in the way we do the show.
I will keep those to myself.
Well, you know how it is. You know how it is. Well, not everybody is going to agree on any given thing, and that's okay.
Yeah, and that is okay. And I think it's good if you don't agree. You know you like Patrick because you're listening. So why is Patrick talking about this? Give him a chance. Listen.
Yeah, and you know what is interesting, too, is when I say in my monologue, this is not intended to belittle anybody. This is not intended to make fun of anybody or criticize anybody. Let's have compassion and look at what's going on. And this could become, if it does go down this road, who knows, it could become a very big event in the history of the United States. I don't believe it's ever happened before. But if it did happen, this would be a huge event. And people are saying, well, you're just making fun of him, or why are you ridiculing him? They don't even listen when I say that that's not the point of bringing up something like this. So that's my humble request. Consider where this anger is coming from. And just, I guess, what I try to do here, what we try to do here, is being willing to listen to people of a variety of different perspectives. And as the saying goes, you know, as St. Paul says, test all things and hold fast to that which is good.
We find,
I think that's a wise policy.
Yeah, and it's kind of our duty to talk about this. If we finally have a Catholic president, one that loves telling everybody how Catholic he is, yeah, it's the most pro-abortion.
That's true. And we're not supposed to talk about that? No.
Right.
That's not how it works.
Right.
But that's political. Everything is political nowadays, it seems. There's hardly anything you can talk about that hasn't been in some way invaded by politics. But we shouldn't be afraid of that. We Catholics have a role to play in this. This is not a political show, and I guess maybe I should add this too. we try as hard as possible to steer clear of politics. Sometimes it's impossible because some of the stories in the news, especially those that deal with moral issues, we're actually going to get to one here in just a second. They necessarily touch upon politics. You can't avoid it. There's no other way to deal with that. But we would have to just stop talking about certain topics simply because there's a politician involved. And that's not going to happen. We have to discuss these issues. And that's why I invite you to call in. We had a couple of people who were angry with me and they hung up. But I invite you to call back. Please feel free. 888-914-9149. Let's talk about this. As long as we're on the political topic, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, she is a Democrat from California, as you know, and she's, as you'll hear her say in a minute, she's very upfront about her Catholic faith. She's also perhaps the most vociferous defender of legalized abortion. And she was giving a press conference at the Capitol yesterday, and she was talking about how she supports a repeal of the Hyde Amendment because, as she says, quote, it's an issue of health of many women in America, especially those in lower income situations and in different states. Now, the Hyde Amendment is the amendment that prohibits the federal government from spending money on abortions. There's more to it, but that's the essence of it. So why don't we listen? Cyrus, I think you have some audio from Speaker Pelosi talking about this issue in the context of her Catholic faith.
Because it's an issue of health of many women in America, especially those in lower income situations and in different states. And it is something that has been a priority for many of us a long time. As a devout Catholic and mother of 5 and 6 years, I feel that God blessed my husband and me with our beautiful family, 5 children, 6 years almost to the day. But that may not be what we should. It's not up to me to dictate that that's what other people should do. And it's an issue of fairness and justice for poor women in our country.
Fairness and justice. What about the children who get killed? My friend Michael Knowles, I think, said it best on Twitter. He said, in response to what Nancy Pelosi said, he says, if you are a devout Catholic, then you do not support abortion. If you support abortion, then you are not a devout Catholic. I think that's the honest truth on this issue. So that happened. Now, Archbishop Cordiglione, who is Nancy Pelosi's archbishop, he issued a statement on the heels of what she had to say there. And you know what? Just to go back to that for a second, I find it interesting that she says, well, you know, I'm a devout Catholic and I have 5 children. God has blessed me, but it's not my place to say anything about anyone else. I wonder if instead of abortion, I wonder if the issue were slavery. I wonder if she would take that same position. Well, I mean, I believe that slavery is wrong, but it's not my place to tell anyone else that it's wrong. Or instead of slavery, what about plain old racism? Well, I'm not a racist, and I've raised my children not to be racist, but I can't really tell anyone else that they can't be racist. I mean, that would be absurd. And we would all recognize that as a cop-out. That's what it would be. And that's what this is. So you can't have it both ways. This is why I think what Michael Knowles said is right. If you are a devout Catholic, you don't support abortion. And if you support abortion, you're not a devout Catholic. And I know that's going to anger some people, but I really do believe that. If you're going to be consistent, I really do believe it. So this is one of those areas where here now we have a sister in Christ, Nancy Pelosi, mother of 5, who's publicly saying that she endorses something that the church emphatically says is reprehensible and gravely sinful, and trying to square that circle and say, well, yeah, I'm a devout Catholic, and I also publicly espouse a position that is directly contrary to what the Catholic Church teaches. I don't see how you can do that. So here's what her bishop said, Archbishop Cordiglione of San Francisco. This was his response. It's not long. He says, let me repeat, no one can claim to be a devout Catholic and condone the killing of innocent human life, let alone have the government pay for it. The right to life is fundamental. It's the most fundamental human right, and Catholics do not oppose fundamental human rights. To use the smokescreen of abortion as an issue of health and fairness to poor women is the epitome of hypocrisy. What about the health of the baby being killed? What about giving poor women real choice so they are supported in choosing life? This would give them fairness and equality to women of means who can't afford to bring a child into the world. It is people of faith who run pro-life crisis pregnancy centers. They're the only ones who provide poor women with life-giving alternatives to having their babies killed in the womb. I cannot be prouder of my fellow Catholics who are so prominent in providing this vital service. To them, I say, you are the ones worthy to call yourselves devout Catholics. And I agree with Archbishop Cordiglione. I think he speaks for the majority of Catholic bishops, just judging from the comments that I see from the various bishops around the country of late, thank God. So I wanted you to be aware of that, because you're bombarded with this stuff on a near daily basis in the media, reminding you of how devout. Oh, and by the way, as long as we're on it, it occurs to me, I wonder if the people who get mad at me for talking about how, on the one hand, say, Nancy Pelosi says that she's a devout Catholic and President Biden says he's a devout Catholic, and yet they support things like abortion and other problematic issues. I wonder if they get mad at CNN and MSNBC when they talk about how devout these Catholics are, President Biden and Speaker Pelosi. I wonder if they get mad at them when they're out there touting the Catholic credentials of some of these Catholic politicians. I have a feeling they probably don't get mad at them. I have a feeling they probably don't call up CNN and get angry with Brian Stelter or whatever his name is. It's just an interesting aspect of this to me. So, Cyrus, have you posted Archbishop Cordiglione's letter yet? I'd like people to be able to see that.
I'm doing it as we speak.
Thank you. Good. Well, now we're off that topic. That's nice. 888-914-9149. Time to take a break, and we'll come right back with more right after this.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149.
We will rock you.
Sing. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now.
All right. That's right. We are back. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We'll get you on the air. Let's go to Chad in Minnesota. Hi, Chad.
Good morning, Patrick. You know, it's been my experience that anytime somebody prefaces a statement with, I'm a devout Catholic, mm-hmm. almost always the next thing they say is something absolutely contrary to that position. Hmm. You know, it's similar to when somebody will start a phrase or a statement with, I'm not a racist, but.
that's right. I don't mean to be critical, but.
Exactly.
I know what you mean.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, I love your show. Have a great
day. Thank you. Oh, that was it? That was easy.
Oh, that's all I got. Yeah, I feel like I'm wasting my time with this call, but I don't have anything else pressing to bring up.
Well, that was pleasant. It was a palate cleanser between calls, so that's great, Chad. Thank you for that. Thanks for the kind words. Let's go to Adam now in Chicago. Hi, Adam.
How you doing, pal?
I am doing great, pal.
How's my brother in Christ doing? Listen, I have a bone to pick with you. I recently, a teacher from the Catholic Church called in one of my radio stations that I listen to on the AM stations. And she commented that you guys are giving them books and everything to teach the kids about critical race theory and the false history of the United States. She won't teach it. And the other teachers won't teach it either.
Okay, I'm lost, Adam. We're not giving anybody books. You mean like book recommendations? Is that what you mean?
No. It's the criteria for the children. She said the Catholic Church supplied it, and she won't teach it, and neither will any of the other teachers on her staff.
Okay.
But she's just, they told her this curriculum is what they're teaching.
And which curriculum is that?
Critical race theory.
Okay.
As well as the false history of the United States. You know, the junk that's going around to all the public schools is now in the Catholic schools, but she won't teach it.
So you have a bone to pick with me?
Well, I'm saying the Catholic Church in general.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I would like to hear your justification of this. I mean, are you guys on some kind of program with the government that they give you money if you teach it?
No, we have no government connections whatsoever, nor do we get money from the government. at least not money for programming or anything. I'm not really sure what you're referring to. How do I justify what exactly?
The Catholic Church teaching critical race theory. And
I don't justify it.
Well, then I need you to find out if what's going on with the Catholic Church, because we need to be informed about this.
Okay, well, fair enough. Have you listened to this program much? Because I've been talking about this off and on for months now.
But I'm trying to understand why that material is given to the Catholic teachers.
I can explain it to you. Yeah, here's why. Okay. Because if a bishop of a given diocese authorizes the chancellor of the school of the diocese school system to do that, then they'll do that. So it may be that a given bishop has not done any due diligence and he doesn't really know that this is a problem, and so he's acting in good faith without realizing that this is pernicious. Perhaps, I don't know, maybe there's a bishop somewhere who actually buys into this ideology. I think that would be likely to be rare. But that's how it happens. Those kinds of things entering the curricula would have to be approved by the person in charge of the school district or the school system for the diocese. That's how it happens.
Is there any way you can find out about this as to what level the Catholic leaders are endorsing this kind of behavior?
Yeah, there's a tool that's available to you, too. It's called Google. And if you sit down at your computer and go to google.com.
I'm sorry. One more time. You got cut off. It's called what?
It's called Google. G-O-O-G-L-E. The website is google.com. And it's amazing what that search engine can pull up. All you have to do is sit down at the computer, type in google.com, and then in the search bar, just type in some of those questions, and you'll very quickly get some answers.
Very good. Thank you very much for the information.
You're most welcome, Adam. Great talking to you. 888-914-9149. We'll go now to Joy in Oak Park. Good morning, Joy.
Good morning. I have a question. This is from Luke chapter 18, verse 18. Okay. And a ruler asked him, "Good teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus said to him, "Why do you call me good?" And that's what I'm stumped on.
Yeah.
He says, "Why do you call me good?" Because he is good.
He is indeed. So let's take a look at the whole verse. He says in verse 19, "And Jesus said to him, 'Why do you call me good? No one is good but God alone.'" And then he proceeds to give an answer to the young man. So understood properly, what Jesus is saying to him is, why do you call me good? Do you realize who I am? Do you realize that I am God? Only God is good. You know, no one is good but God alone. So why do you call me good? So he's not trying to avoid or shrug off the connection with God. He's actually making it more clear that he himself is God by asking the young man what he's in.
I see. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Joy. Thank you. Yeah, it's one of those enigmatic passages that at first glance, I could easily understand why any of us might wonder about that. What does that mean exactly? What does it mean when Jesus says to St. Mary Magdalene, I will ascend to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God. And Jehovah's Witnesses have a field day with this when they come door to door telling people that the Trinity is a false doctrine and Jesus wasn't really God. They'll point to that verse and they'll say, how can Jesus be God? How can God have a God? If Jesus is God, how can he have a God above him? It doesn't make any sense. Therefore, it must be true that Jesus isn't really divine, which of course is not true, but that must be understood in the context of Christ's humanity. So as we know, Jesus is true God and true man, or as St. John said in John 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And then in verse 14, it says, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. So in the incarnation, by taking to himself a perfect and complete human nature, Jesus has joined our humanity to his own divinity, and in Jesus Christ, he is true God and true man. In other words, he's not God in a human costume, but he really has a human nature united to him. But it's still a human nature, meaning it's a creature. So when Jesus says things like that, I ascend to my Father and to your Father, to my God and your God, it's a reference to his human nature. And in his human nature, he is a creature created by God. I know it's very, these are deep waters, but they're very, they are more accessible than you might imagine, everybody, when you stop and consider these issues. So I love talking about things like that. I'm glad that the caller raised it. And if you're interested in going deeper on topics such as that one, I encourage you to start with Frank Sheed's book, Theology for Beginners, and then graduate to his next book. It's a longer, more involved book, but it's much, much deeper. And you'll enjoy it even more if you read Theology for Beginners first. The second book is called Theology and Sanity. Let's see. We have time. Let's do it. Let's go to Maria in Chicago. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you. I've been listening to this whole conversation about devout Catholics, and I am a devout Catholic. I mm-hmm. oppose abortion 100%. Mm-hmm. I have three children. They're millennials. I raised them Catholic, a strict Catholic. And now my daughter, my youngest, who's 26, she decides that she wants to move in with her boyfriend. And it broke my heart and her father's heart. And we talked to her about this, that, you know, we don't do this. It's mm-hmm. not what our church teaches or what our culture teaches, whatever. And she said, well, it's not your decision. And I want to know what you think, because I don't even know. People tell me, don't break your relationship with your daughter. But I cannot be on her side and the church side at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, as to that last part, I think you can, not that you would be on her side, in other words, supporting her decision to do this, but you can still have a relationship with her and love her and show her that compassion that you would always give to your children because they're your children. You know, you'll always love them no matter what they do, right? You'll still love them even if you disagree with some of the things they'll do, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think that has to remain present, and she has to hear it from you or see it from you. Now, I'm with you 100% that you are right in telling her this is the wrong way to go. This is you're heading down a path that for many people winds up in hell. And I love you and I don't want to see that happen to you. So when she said to you, but this is not your decision, she's actually right about that. She's 26. She's a young woman. She can make her own decisions. And at this point now, you are left with just watching with anxiety because you see her making bad decisions and there's nothing you can do to prevent her from doing them. But in the meantime, as you pray for her and continue to show her that you love her, hey, I disagree with you. Hey, can we come and visit? My boyfriend and I will come visit. We'll stay in the spare bedroom. No, you can, but he can't, because that's a serious sin. And that's probably going to grate on her, and she won't like it, and she won't like it, and she won't like it. But eventually, maybe, she'll come to her senses. Let me tell you a story, Marie. I know a family. What you said reminds me of this family. I knew the mom and dad very well, and they had, I think it was six children, five boys and a girl. And their girl, when she got to be, I think, a little bit younger than your daughter, she might have been maybe early 20s, she started doing this thing, and then she became promiscuous, and she was living with her boyfriend, and it just drove her father batty because he didn't raise her that way. And there's nothing that he could say or his wife could say or her brothers could say that would nudge her off of this decision to do what she was doing. And she went on this way for several years. And it caused a great deal of tension in this family. And eventually, she came to her senses. I guess the guy, she realized what a jerk he is. And they broke up. And then she began to think about it. And the more she thought about it, the more she realized, I should have listened to my parents. I wish I had listened to my parents. And they had a grand reconciliation several years later. And she came to her senses. She came back to the practice of her faith. And then she got happily married. And she's got a bunch of babies. She got a bunch of kids now. And she's a busy, happy Catholic mom, you know, just like you were when you were raising kids. So it does happen where a child who's raised well in a good Catholic family like yours, eventually, after making some serious mistakes, comes to her senses and then turns back like the prodigal son, and things do get better again. So my heartfelt advice, Maria, would be keep praying for her, keep loving her, keep showing her that you love her. Don't back down from what you know is true. Don't compromise. But keep those doors open and continue to pray for her. And I would not be at all surprised if you have a grand reconciliation of your own when she comes to her senses at some point down the road.
Oh, thank you so much. I feel better now.
I'm glad. Are you in the habit of praying the rosary, Maria?
Yes. I have it on my radio, on my iPhone in English and in Spanish.
Perfect. Perfecto. Well, I think that's the most powerful weapon outside of receiving our Lord and the Holy Eucharist. That's the most powerful weapon that you can wield in this battle for your daughter's soul. So just keep praying faithfully and ask Our Lady to help you help her. Our Lady will not let you, she will not let you down. And if you put Our Lady on the case, good things are going to happen.
Okay, I will do. Thank you so much.
Thank you. God bless you. Thanks. It's painful. Yes, I know. It is painful. And parents, I feel your pain. And I can tell you that there are miracles waiting to happen, but very often they depend upon your assiduousness in prayer. So be very prayerful for these kids of yours, and don't give up hope. I'll be right back with Hour 2 right after this.